Have you finished your personal statement yet? Now's the perfect time to get it professionally reviewed by a medical school HQ expert advisor. We have former directors of admissions, admissions officers, and the like on our small team of amazing people. They have the inside knowledge from reading thousands and thousands and thousands, tens, if not 100,000 personal statements going through the process and setting up the process for their whole committee. They know exactly what medical schools look for and the common red flags that can get your entire application thrown out. Take advantage of our flash sale right now, going through May 6th, up to 6,000 characters reviewed for just $150. That's a $75 discount on our regular price. Go to editmyps.com. Again, that's editmyps.com. The pre-med year, session number 567. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you are having a wonderful, wonderful week. It is April. I can't believe it. If you are applying to medical school in 2024, wow, the application cycle is right around the corner. If you've been looking for some help with your application, we have a small team of amazing expert advisors at medical school headquarters waiting to help you. Use the promo code PMY to save some money on essay editing, interview prep, full application cycle prep, where we will guide you hand in hand through your journey. Again, that's medicalschoolhq.net. Use the promo code PMY. Today, we have a great guest, a physician who's following in the footsteps of his father, even though that wasn't his plan to begin with. Before we jump into that, though, I want to talk about the MCAT Minute brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. Did you know if you go to blueprintmcat.com, sign up for their free account, you get an amazing study planner tool to help you craft a schedule for you. I had a parent ask me recently, hey, my kid needs help creating a schedule. Can you help them? I was like, I can't help them. I'm not an MCAT tutor or instructor, but you know what can help them? BlueprintMCAT.com with their free account and their amazing free study planner tool. Again, go to BlueprintMCAT.com today. All right, let's go and jump in. Say hello to Dr. William Kilgo. Dr. William Kilgo, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks. I'm glad to be on.
When did you first realize you wanted to be a doctor?
Well, not really until I got to college. I would say I went through high school, you know, not really paying much attention, you know, to what I wanted to do in life. My dad is a neurologist, and I always, you know, never really thought I was going to go to medical school, so I didn't pay that much attention to what he does for a living, you know, until I, you know, got to college, and I really wanted to be a videographer, cinematographer, make movies. And I got to college and worked at a TV station for one semester, and it was by far the most stressful, you know, 2 to 3 months of my life. You know, comparatively to being a doctor now, I would much rather be in a ICU code than ever working in a TV station again. But I kind of started, you know, when I was in college after that, retrospectively thinking about other options and, you know, took a biology class and loved it and kind of went from there, ended up in med school, you know, a neurologist just like my dad.
Yeah. I talk to lots of kids who are who have parents who are doctors, and there's typically the what do you call that? The when the kids fight back against or whatever. I can't find my words today. Do you think when you were going through that period that it wasn't necessarily like you didn't think about medicine, or you didn't want to be like your dad, and therefore you kind of fought back against that?
I think it's more I just didn't think about it for me. I had no issue with wanting to be like him or not. I mean, I was very honored with what he does. And, you know, honestly, it's really changed the way I'm able to talk to my dad, because we do the same thing. And I know this whole side of him, you know, now that maybe I didn't connect with earlier in life. So we're both neurologists, so we talk about very different things now than we used to be able to. So, you know, I don't think I was necessarily bucking against being, you know, a physician too. But you know, I like to think I came back to it on my own. Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of everyone's struggle, maybe in that same situation, but, you know, I was very lucky, to be able to, you know, get to it later on and still be successful in getting, you know, into school and everything. And you know, it's been great.
Yeah. Who has the better, both neurologists, who has the better bow tie collection?
Neither one of us is too into bow ties. I tried, you know, when I was in fellowship, when I arrived, I was like, I'm going to start wearing bow ties now. And everyone else was. So, like, I kind of couldn't really make it my thing. So, I made myself a no-tie
person
instead of the bow tie.
Nice. But there you go. Bucking the trend all over again. Yeah. When you decided to go back and kind of find your path as a pre-med student, what do you remember being kind of the hardest thing about being a pre-med student?
It's just a lot of, you know, I grew up in the time when, you know, there wasn't as much information on the internet. Mm-hmm. It was a very veiled process. You had to rely a lot on books, you know, believe it or not, we had to read books back then to find information.
So, and not digital books.
Right. So like you had to go to Barnes and Noble and buy a book about how to apply to medical school and read it, which is what I did to some degree. So I was pretty naive about the process. I wasn't in all the pre-med groups, didn't really go to the AED meetings, you know, that a lot of colleges have. So I'm surprised I made it through, honestly. Probably shouldn't have, based on not taking anyone's advice, but just having to figure it out. But going through it, you know, now versus then, there's so much information at your fingertips, resources like this online. You know, people weren't really doing podcasts in whatever year that was, 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I think the information that you have now to do it is much, much better.
Yeah. There's a lot. And sometimes that comes with its own, issues as well. Too many hands in the cookie jar, trying to understand this process. When you finally got in to medical school, right? Your dad's a neurologist. How did you figure out your path to neurology?
Well, you kind of get through the first 2 years of med school, and that's just a struggle. I mean, for me, it was a struggle just to make it through those first 2 years. You know, I didn't do super well my first year, to be honest. I got a talking to from a couple of faculty about my performance on some exams and, you know, got to a play-by-play of everything I missed. And
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. I didn't have to repeat anything, but I felt like I was, you know, kind of a borderline student for the first time, you know, during my M1 year.
Okay.
So
I want to come back to that after the neurology story, because I think that'll be useful.
Yeah. So there's a lot of pressure with that. And then, you know, I the second year you do your neuroscience kind of basic science block, and it was really hard. And, you know, I was probably miserable most days, honestly, but I really liked the material. So that kind of carried over with me to my third year rotations, and neurology was my first rotation and I loved it. You know, but honestly, it was my first day in the clinic during third year. So I was like, I'm just relieved to be out of the classroom. This is not what I'm supposed to do. So I did everything else. Honestly, didn't like anything else. I liked everything, but not to the same degree.
Yeah.
So I came back and did an elective, and loved it again. I particularly love the department I work in now, which is the same department where I was a medical student.
Nice.
Just the people here are awesome. So that's kind of what did it for me.
Yeah. And as an MS specialist, you're kind of coming up at a time where we can finally do something. We have really good medications for MS, which is awesome.
Yeah, right. We had a mentor at that time. It was an MS specialist in the department, a new faculty member, really young faculty member, is very encouraging to our group. So my class, we had 75 students, and traditionally there's either zero or one person going into neurology. We had seven that year. So almost 10% of the class went into neurology, which is unheard of here and has not happened again ever since. So we had really good mentorship. So that's kind of what helped get me going.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's go back to your struggle during your M1 year. You said that was kind of your first time that you struggled as a student. My M1 year and M2 year were not pretty. I had taken a couple of years off of school. I'd forgotten how to be a student, and then med school is just a completely another level anyway. What was it about the pace, the material, what was it about your M1 year that caused you to struggle some?
I think it's just so much at the same time. And I had probably never truthfully learned how to study, because, stuff kind of comes natural. At a certain point in college, you can fly by the seat of your pants and study at the last minute. I was never used to a daily studying, getting home after school, studying, up until dinner time or later every day, that I was like, well, I've done fine. I'll be fine. But it doesn't always work that way. So, so that hit me hard. I had to kind of adjust my expectations for what my time was going to be spent like, and kind of refocused, and, got some advice from, really great friends I've made, study groups and things like that. And we just kind of took it on as a team effort. You hear about people called, gunners in med school who want to take you down. Yep. But I had really good friends, and we all lifted each other up, and we're all struggling together, and that helped.
Yeah. All trauma bonding. When it came to, you said you got a talking to, there's always a big fear among students that as soon as you struggle, the school's going to kick you out. Did you feel support from your institution? Did you feel like they were out to get you? What was that like?
No, I never felt threatened by it. I think it was out of concern, more so than, something bad's going to happen to you. It was, hey, we just want to say, hey, this was your first big exam and you got this score. I'm not going to say what it was, but it was bad. I just want you to understand what this is bad, and, what do you think happened? And it was more of a debrief, but we went through my answering strategy, but it felt like I was being like, oh, then you got this one right, but then you missed seven in a row. I was like, okay, great. Thank you. But
thank you for that reminder. Yeah. To put all the cards out on the table, I failed my first med school test. We had histology and anatomy at the same time, and I wanted to be an orthopod. That was why I went to med school. So anatomy, I was like, oh, this is easy, right? I had studied it in college and put all my effort into that. And then, of course, the subject that I didn't study, I failed. But yeah, it doesn't feel good. So it sounds like we're very similar in terms of just things coming relatively easy in college. And then med school is like, oh, I'm not as smart as I thought I was, or I have to work harder now.
Yeah, it's directly related to, I think, how hard you work in a lot of ways. But, everybody's in the top tier of, fortitude in terms of academics. And, if you think you're good enough based on what you've been doing, it's not going to work.
Yeah. How do you, what kind of words of advice do you have for a student who's listening to this, who in undergrad is looking around at all the people who are getting better grades? And that potentially carries over into med school as well. Any advice for that student to avoid that or to work through that?
I mean, I think, knowing how you learn is just as important as anything. People who are making 99s, 100s, sure, they're probably really hardworking people. But, if they know how to learn and are making those grades, I think that's great. But, knowing what what your learning style is. I think that's the most important thing. I never knew that. It was memorization probably is what it was, I would assume. And, you know, lack of understanding on a lot of things. I understood math really well and was really good at math, but like just absorbing a crazy amount of facts and spitting them back out, that was incredibly difficult, especially when it's fed to you as quickly as it is in med school.
Yeah. When you were looking at applying to neurology programs for residency, what were you looking for in a program? It's not something we typically talk about here on the pre-med years, but I think it'd be an interesting conversation, especially for you as a program director. What are things that stand out for you as a someone when you were applying?
You know, I probably came out of resident or student at a med school with probably a certain degree of, you know, naivety as well, you know, about the process, because, you know, you're so absorbed in just getting out of school, you don't thinking about it too much. And there's less information available at that time too. This was, you know, 10 years ago. So I just wanted, you know, the good feel, you know, when I was looking around. And I got that good feel when I was interviewing, you know, for medical school, you know, where I went to school at USA and in Mobile, Alabama. I had that good feeling during the interview day. And I was looking for that. And this is back when we did in-person interviews too for residency, which we don't do anymore. But, you know, it was kind of the feel of the town. I was getting, you know, I was engaged, getting married around that time. So my fiance, now wife, was very involved in the decision too. So a place we would want to live, cities we liked, you know, so we really took an inventory. And, you know, it just comes down to kind of a gut feel. I had a pretty good feel about where I am now, which is where I did residencies at USA and Mobile. But, you know, I took a look at some really, you know, big name programs too, like, you know, Vanderbilt and Mayo Clinic and places like that. And I like them too, but it's an algorithm, and it puts you, like, it put me where I was supposed to be.
Yeah. Awesome. When, as a program director now, you're reviewing lots of applications for residency spots. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for in an application? Because I think that sort of decision making is transferable to medical school admissions as well.
It is. I look for, you know, good experience, I guess, you know, is hard to define. What that means, you know, someone who one has a minimum level of academic horsepower to do the job, but someone who's also a good normal person, you know, who you could see yourself getting along with well. A lot of that you get out of the interview. Is this somebody who fits in well here? But in terms of specific things someone has to have done, there's no one or two things, you know, a cursory amount of research experience is good, just to show, you know, how to manage a project. And that just, you know, time management skills are important, you know, but there's no specific recipe, and that may be different for other specialties. When you're looking for someone to be a neurologist, you want to make sure that they're actually interested in neurology. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think the applicants to neurology were interested in it, but it takes a special type of person to do it. So you really have to probe that and make sure that they have the right way of thinking, you know, because we're a little different just in terms of the way we do things and the way we act.
Yes. I am married to a neurologist, so I can vouch for that fact. Why would someone be applying to neurology who isn't interested in neurology?
Well, there's a lot of folks who are maybe dual applying to different specialties now, who didn't used to, or I guess for our program specifically, we're a smaller program in the South, not a huge name like some of the others out there. So, you know, genuine interest in our program, you know, specifically as opposed to others, are we just on your list to be on your list, or do you really want to come here? Mm-hmm. You know, have you familiar with the city? Do you have any connection around here? And that may seem, you know, not merit-based or anything, but you want someone who wants to be there. That has a lot to do with it too.
Yeah. And you can figure that out just by having that conversation or seeing where they've been in the past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes. And you know, we have this thing called program signaling mm-hmm. now on the ERAS applications where you can indicate you have a special connection to this area or family in this area. And, you know, so that's been helpful. You know, somebody applying from Washington State, if they signal my program in Mobile, Alabama, I might think about them a little differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what's your interest here? That's definitely interesting. So when you think about being a pre-med now, right, having gone through this process, residency, fellowship, now program director, and you're seeing kind of the product, so to speak, of medical education now, what would you change about any parts of this crazy process?
Oh gosh, that's a hard question. I think people who are much more well qualified are making those decisions. But I think, you know, as much hands-on experience as you can get, early on, you know, really understanding what you're getting into, I think is important. A lot of people want to go to med school because it's med school, you know, or like you have this goal in mind, as you're going, and getting to that goal is the most important thing. You don't really think about if you like what you're doing along the way or anything like that. I think it's just kind of understanding what you're doing and why you're doing it, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot of things that you did not used to be there, like early clinical experience that's offered in med school, which I think has really been a big help. I've noticed that in our students, they've changed the curriculum from a semester-based, you know, coursework like I did to more of a, you know, early clinical exposure. And I think that helps them, you know, see even some of the other subspecialties that they may not see until, you know, third, fourth year. So I think just that, you know, like I said, people have so much more information now than they used to. I think that's, you know, students are much more well-versed, very selective in what they're looking for now. You know, they just have more, you know, going on that they can use to make their decisions than we used to. So, and some attendings who are older these students are, you know, everybody's different now than they used to be. You know, in my day, we just did what we were told and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's good that students, you know, have all these options now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So, When you think of the pre-med student now, looking potentially from what your dad told you about going to med school, what you experienced going to med school, and then potentially what you see students doing now to get into med school, there's a lot of stuff, right? Being a good student and all of these activities and the MCAT and applications and all that crazy stuff. What do you think a student... The question I get all the time is, how do I stand out in an application? And I tell students all the time, right? There's 60,000 plus students applying to medical school every year. Everything's been done, right? And authenticity for me is how you stand out. What is it for you that stands out in an application, or when you see a student rotating through your program, that's like, oh, this student's got it.
It, you know, ability to present information succinctly, communicate succinctly, writing well. Is this someone you could speak to on the phone in the middle of the night about an acute problem, you know, and trust that they have it all together? Those are some of the things we think about, particularly in residency selection. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be able to not ramble, you know, for 20 minutes to tell me about someone who's having a stroke, because we got to give them medicine right away, you know. So communication skills, being genuine, again, like you said, is a big thing. And that's kind of an intangible quality. And you don't know it till you see it. I think the Supreme Court justice said that. But, you know, so that's hard to say. You know, I don't know what makes someone stand out in particular, but you can just tell, you know, sometimes, and there may be a lot of bias in that from, you know, program to program, what stands out versus what doesn't. And, you know, we try to remove ourselves from that, best we can. But sometimes it's maybe that student who takes an extra step to express interest, you know, in a special way, you know, hey, I really do want to come to this place specifically for this reason, you know, and, you know, emails like that, you can tell the ones that are manufactured and just sent out to every program around the country. But, you know, if you get one that's very specific and personalized, that goes a long way. Yeah. Sometimes.
For the student listening, they may not understand this term, so I'll define it real quick. Audition rotations or away rotations during medical school are when students go to a program potentially they're interested in and show off, right? Audition. Are those going away? Are those still as strong as ever? What is the status of those?
I think for the hyper-competitive subspecialties like orthopedics and certain things like that, they're still very much a thing, especially if you come from maybe a school without as robust of a program, you know, in that you kind of have to have an in with certain programs. So you see students doing 4 to 6 audition rotations now. You know, we have a few come through here. It's usually, you know, maybe coming from a school that didn't have a formal neurology clerkship or, you know, things like that. But I do think they help, you know, seeing things done a different way in a different place might open your eyes to that specialty in a different way, either positively or negatively. So I encourage people to do at least one. You know, when they're applying.
Yeah, definitely. When it comes to, you mentioned, right, students who may not have a program at their institution, I think this is very applicable to the pre-med student. Letters of recommendations. It's often the student's home institution, the program director at their home institution that's writing a letter of recommendation for that specialty. What are some ways that students can connect with letter writers, whether it's a professor in undergrad or the program director for their residency applications?
I think for residency interviews, the ones we value the most are, you know, people who have directly observed the applicant in a clinical setting, not my friend of a friend who's this person who I talked on the phone once, who wrote me a letter, or a letter from the chair of a department who has reviewed your CV once and wrote you a letter, but someone who knows you, has seen what you can do. And you can tell in the tone from the way a letter is written, you know, how well that person knows you. Those are the ones I value the most. But connecting with those writers, there's so many ways to do that now. You know, if you're training at a large university, it's not that hard, you know, to find people. But, you know, like you said, as someone at a smaller place, not a lot of access to the specialist directly, there's so many online tools now, you know, things like this. A lot of students are getting on social media, you know, connecting with, you know, mentors at other institutions and working on projects collaboratively. You know, I think that's good. But kind of, you know, that direct experience with someone is what I think goes the farthest.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, what kind of final words of wisdom do you have for the student going through this process? Probably with a lot of people chirping in their ears about, like, why do this? Like, medicine's not the way it used to be, and I don't like being a doctor anymore. what words of wisdom do you have for those students?
I mean, there's a lot of naysayers, you know, people who may be burned out in medicine. You know, I can say, you know, truthfully, I don't know what else I would do with my life right now. Very happy to be where I am, what I'm doing. I find it fulfilling. I feel like I have a purpose. Part of that is teaching. But, you know, it's hard to know, you know, really what you're getting into until you're doing it. You know, I feel like I had good guidance along the way. Finding people you trust to talk to. If you have people who are not encouraging of you, talk to other people, you know, and make sure that that advice is, you know, authentic. Because I think you can find people who will be very encouraging of you in spite of whatever, you know, path you might take. I think it's worth it. You know, I wish it was more accessible and easier for everyone. And, you know, I hate turning away applications when I'm reviewing them because I remember what it was like to be, you know, in that position. And some of the things that might make us less likely to review one application versus another, it's sometimes it's subjective, you know. So, you know, I wish we had a spot for everyone, but we're a lot of programs are smaller and we do our best. But to everyone who wants to do it and really genuine about it, find out as much as you can about it. It would be my advice. And, you know, just seek quality mentors who want to support you.
All right. So there you have it again, Dr. William Kogo, a neurologist talking about his journey to medical school, following in the footsteps of his father and some of his life and roles as a program director and all of that good stuff. I hope you as a pre-med student learned something today. Again, I want to remind you, if you want some help with your applications, that's what we do day in and day out. That's what supports our team to help continue to put out these podcasts and videos and everything that we do at medicalschoolhq.net. Go to medicalschoolhq.net, click on that advising tab and see how we can help you. And don't forget to use PMY as a code to save some money. Hope you have a great, great week. We'll see you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.